Good afternoon, Your Honor. Janet Fricke, registration number 10490, appearing on behalf of the appellants, Mr. and Mrs. Cavallari. I would request to have 10 minutes for this portion of my argument and reserve 5 in rebuttal if necessary. All right. We are here for an opinion from the court of statutory construction of whether a private homeowner who hires work to be done at their home is entitled to the protections and damage limitations present in the Workers' Compensation Act. The Andersons, which are the homeowners in this case, contracted with an independent contractor, Mr. Cavallari, to lay tile at their home. They are not entitled to the protection of the Workers' Compensation Act and the limitation of damages ruled by the trial court. The trial court improperly applied the damage limitations present in the Workers' Compensation Act that had been enacted to protect the interests of builders and general contractors in 841-4013.
Haven't you partially answered the question by characterizing your client as an independent contractor?
Yes. That's correct. He is not an employee. And what is important is the distinction. The court misapplied the section of the act to limit the damages in this case by automatically looking only at his status as an employee independent contractor and not the status of the quote-unquote employer. The relationship has to be analyzed, and what happened is
normally the relationship between two contracting independent parties and an independent contractor is different than an employee-employee relationship, and there's a lot of litigation in the workman's comp area dealing with that subject. So isn't the fact that your client is an independent contractor affect his ability to, the obligation of the homeowner to have workman's comp if they have an obligation?
It does, but this is what I'm trying to say, and maybe not doing it very clearly. The section that the court applied is a section that is applicable to people that contract out work as their business. They're in the business of using contractors.
What language in the statute leads you to that inference?
You're talking about
841-4013, correct?
I am, Judge.
Right, so the first sentence says it applies to, or it seems to apply to, the exclusion of people who are not employees, which your client was not an employee within the definition, right?
Correct.
It also excludes coverage for sole proprietors, which your client also was, right?
Correct.
Therefore, your client was not covered by workman's comp, as the first sentence provides, right?
Correct.
Therefore, if he brings a lawsuit for work-related injuries that otherwise would have been covered had he had workman's comp, his claim cannot exceed $15,000. Isn't that what the judge found?
The judge found that that section applied. And what I am saying is that in analyzing the applicability of the Workers' Compensation Act to this particular case, the court needed to go to who was the quote-unquote employer.
All right, where does it say that in the statute? What language of the statute leads you to that inference? And just point to the words that you're talking about.
Well, the words are, there is a general provision of the statute. This is a general provision. There are specific exclusions that have been carved out over time of sections of the act to which the general provisions do not apply. And in this case, the specific provisions regarding homeowners apply. And if you read it without reading the act as a whole, you do not do, you're not providing the interpretation. Because, Mr. Cavallari, the question to be addressed is whether or not he could have made a claim against the homeowner under workers' compensation.
Could he have?
He have said, you are my employer.
Could he have?
No. And that is the point. And because he could not have, he is not entitled to workers' compensation, and consequently, the homeowners are not entitled to the protections provided by the Act.
The statute you're talking about says, the total amount of damage is recoverable from a cause of action for a work-related injury brought by the individual that would otherwise have been compensable under workers' comp shall not exceed.
That's correct. This is not otherwise compensable.
Why not?
Because the employer is not a person who could be his employer under the Act, and therefore it is not compensable.
This employer could have purchased workman's compensation, right?
They could have, and if they would have, then they would be eligible for the limitation applied by the trial court.
Well, because then the damages would have been compensable under workers' comp, right?
Correct. He had a claim against them as
correct.
His employer. That's correct.
Now, my question is, is there any reason why your client, Mr. Cavallari, I believe, could not have purchased workers' comp?
He could have purchased workers' comp, but his purchasing of workers' compensation only limits his recovery under the general provision, because if he had not purchased it, he would have been able to bring a claim against in Pulsifer. Mr. Pulsifer was a painter working for a general contractor. And if he would have not had coverage, he could have brought a claim against the general contractor because he's not an employee and recovered damages. So what this
could have recovered non-workman's compensation damages?
Correct. He's like anybody else. And so what the law says, if you're going to do that, then you are limited to $15,000 in damages. If the defendants in this claim would have been Richmond Homes, we reach a different conclusion. But these defendants are private homeowners.
I gather you draw that comfort from in your last statement by the phrase it says at the end, except in any cause of action brought against another, not in the same employ.
Correct. But what the court said in Pulsifer about the analysis of not in the same employ is that is analogous to your ability to bring a civil suit in common law or by statute. And he would be able to bring a negligence claim but for being covered by workers' compensation.
What in the statutory text or in the statutes themselves makes the distinction between Richmond Homes and the homeowners?
The definition of an employer. Richmond Homes would be Impulsifer, his employer under the Workers' Compensation Act as a statutory employer.
Definitions as statutory employer, did that play a critical part in the Pulsifer analysis?
It did. It did. And so there's a codification of people that the legislature has determined we are not going to extend the obligation to provide workers' compensation insurance to people who do work for you. And those are codified in 840.302 specifically, and it indicates that the Workers' Compensation Act does not apply to a homeowner who hires a worker for maintenance, repair, or remodeling.
So that means they don't have the obligation to provide workers' comp.
That's correct, and if they don't...
But they have an option to provide workers' comp.
They do.
Okay, they didn't in this case.
Correct.
And therefore, your client wasn't able to sort of opt into their workers' comp, right?
Correct.
On the other hand, you just told me a few minutes ago, he could have otherwise provided his own workers' comp, right?
He could have.
And therefore, his injury would otherwise have been compensable under workman's comp had he bought it for himself.
It would have been, no, because, and I apologize if I answered that question improperly.
He would
only be eligible if they opted in, because they are not obligated unless they opt to provide it, which was an amendment to the Act in
445.
So I guess, could he have bought his own workers' comp? Surely he could have bought
his own. Surely, of course.
And then he would not, then his injury would otherwise have been compensable, right? Under workers' comp?
No.
Okay.
No.
One more time.
It would have been if he was working for Richmond Homes. It would not have been if he's working for the...
Himself?
For himself and for these particular employers.
No.
He can opt in to his own workman's comp coverage.
Yes, but he can still have a claim against the homeowners for negligence. And then the workers' compensation carrier would have a subrogatable interest in the lawsuit against the homeowners.
Which statute would that be?
Under the negligence of strangers.
Strangers, right. But then they have to be parties who are, now we're up to the next clause, then they have to be parties, another who are not in the same employ, right?
But that is really, the court, that is really only an indication that you have a right to proceed against that person in a negligence claim.
Yes, and that's what you wanted to do here. So
yes.
Not so, okay. So how were the homeowners, and this is a hard question to ask because it's funny phraseology, how were the homeowners not others not in the same employ?
Because he can maintain a tort claim against them for negligence.
Well, that's the result, but explain to me how you get to that result based on the language that there are others not in the same
employ. That's what the court said in Pulsifer when they did the analysis on that old strange language, that really what it was meant to imply was that you had the right to proceed in a negligence claim or in common law or by statute. And I have the case in front of me. And what I'm trying to be clear about here is that Pulsifer would have had a compensable claim, but for his choice not to insure himself against the PPC, which was his employer under workers' compensation statutory employer.
He had a claim against PPC, but it was limited to $15,000.
But if he had procured insurance for himself, they would have been they would have been his employer. Meaning they were he was limited in his recovery from them because he did not procure his own insurance. And the purpose of that statutory section is to limit those subcontractors who are working for businesses who contract out their business to $15,000 if they don't provide insurance for themselves. It's a business decision, and that's present in the cases. That's what the Snook case found. They found that the intent of that statute was for that particular purpose. And Mr. Cavallari would not have had a compensable claim against the private homeowners in this case unless they opted to opt into the workers' compensation system and buy insurance, which they did not. They're not entitled to the protections of the Workers' Compensation Act. Oh, sorry.
There are very few powers that I have, but one of them is over the clock. So I may give you some more time later, but
all
if
right.
You want to stop
thank
now,
well,
that's...
much.
Good afternoon, Your Honors. My name is Terry Vasquez. I'm here on behalf of the appellees who were defendants in the trial court, Heidi and Aaron Anderson. I'd like to start off by addressing some of the points made by appellant today. First, with respect to whether Mr. Cavallari could have obtained workers' compensation insurance covering himself and therefore have an injury claim that otherwise would have been compensable under the work comp system. It is a fact that Mr. Cavallari could have procured that insurance for himself. That in and of itself would not have made the Andersons his employer. And if you look at the statute that allows for sole proprietors to cover themselves, which is 840.302 subsection 5b, it states that a sole proprietor can purchase workers' compensation benefits for their company and name themselves as an employee of the company. 8-40.302-5b.
That's not exactly what it says. What it says is a sole proprietor actively engaged in business may elect to be included by endorsement as an employee of the insured. Who's the insured?
The insured is the business.
Himself?
Yes. Okay. And if you read the next sentence, I think that clarifies it because it talks about even if the sole proprietor is the only employer, even if there are no other employees of the business.
Insured and the sole proprietor are the same person.
Yes. Yes.
And he's entitled to elect coverage, regardless of whether the sole proprietor employs another. If the homeowners had bought insurance here, he could have elected coverage as well, right?
Sure.
And you're saying this also allows him to elect coverage as the both the insured and the sole proprietor. That's what you're saying.
Okay. Correct. And the cases that have interpreted the statute we're here about today, which is 8-41-4013, have talked about, in one case in particular, the Continental Divide case, even talked about the fact that the plaintiff in that case had two different ways they could have covered themselves with workers' compensation. One being electing to be covered by the general contractor, and the other one covering themselves by a sole proprietor.
Continental Divide.
And it's cited in the briefs, Your Honor.
Do you agree with opposing counsel that the definition of statutory employer played a significant role in the Pulsifer case?
I disagree, Your Honor. In fact, the Pulsifer Court specifically stated that when looking at the phrase in the statute, not of the same employee, that it was not determinative as to whether the plaintiff was a statutory employee or even whether the defendant was a statutory employer. That the focus should be on, was the plaintiff providing services directly for the defendant? And that's what we have here. Mr. Cavallari was providing services for pay directly for the Andersons. And in fact, in Pulsifer, the defendant there, Pueblo Professional Contractors, was not required to provide workers' compensation benefits for the independent contractor, Mr. Pulsifer. So by virtue of the statute itself, the workers' compensation statute, the defendant was not required to provide workers' compensation benefits in Pulsifer. And the court noted that because Mr. Pulsifer did not then obtain his own workers' compensation policy, that he was subject to the limitation in 8-41-4013. So I disagree that statutory employer analysis was important to Pulsifer because it was considered and rejected.
What was seemingly important there was this next clause, right? If we agree with you that the Cavallari's injury would otherwise have been compensable, he's limited to $15,000, right?
Correct.
That's what the judge ruled. Unless it's a cause of action brought against another not in the same employee.
Correct.
The simple understanding of that sense is that it's got to be, to me, one employee versus another employee. Two different people on the same job working for different contractors is probably the most classic example. We don't have that here. We have an employee and homeowners. Can you explain to us why the exception doesn't apply? Because are they not another not in the same employee? I mean, they're not employed at all.
Well, I think the language of the Pulsifer Court, when the court stated that when you're trying to determine if the parties are within the same employ, you look to see if one is providing services directly for the other. In other words, you don't have one person providing services for a third party and then the defendant is some sort of incidental beneficiary of that. You look at the relationship between the two. Is one providing services directly for the other? And that language comes directly from Pulsifer, and that is what we have here. And that's what the court looked at in Mr. Pulsifer, even though he was an independent contractor. He wasn't a co-employee with Pulsifer Professional Contractors. He was providing services for that company. Technically, under another section of the work comp statute, 8-40-202 subsection 2, it states that an employee is anyone who performs services for pay for another. So if you just look at that definition, there is Mr. Cavallari would be an employee of the Andersons. Mr. Pulsifer was an employee of Pueblo Professional Contractors. But then elsewhere in the statute, I think those were the sections that appellant was referring to, is the legislature enacted certain situations where employers who are defined under 2022 did not have to provide workers' compensation benefits. And that's where the homeowners exemption comes in. The homeowners who are paying domestic workers or the homeowners who are contracting work out on their qualified residence do not have to provide workers' compensation benefits to those employees.
Isn't it somewhat ironic that with that exemption, they would be liable under negligence for unlimited amount of money to the independent contractor?
It is.
If, you know, absent workman's compensation coverage?
It is, Your Honor, and the Pulsifer Court addressed that. The Pulsifer Court noted that this is a harsh consequence and that it may not be fair because you're dealing with a defendant who did not have to pay the premiums for a workers' compensation policy, yet is getting the benefit of this damages cap. But the Pulsifer Court said, harsh as it may be, the purpose is to encourage those people like the plaintiff in Pulsifer, like Mr. Cavallari here, who have an opportunity to participate in the work comp system and choose not to. The Pulsifer Court said that we are going to shift the risk of damages exceeding $15,000 to the person who has an opportunity to participate in work comp but chooses not to. And again, the Snook Court also acknowledged that inequities might result from the application of this statute, but the Snook Court found it to be constitutional. And the Pulsifer Court had said earlier, absent any constitutional infirmities, trial courts are obliged to follow the intent of 841-4013, harsh as it may seem.
Let me direct your attention to the last phrase.
Yes.
Which come up already and also in our discussions.
Are you in Pulsifer, Your Honor?
No, I'm in the last phrase of the statute.
Okay.
Except in any cause of action brought against another not in the same employ. Doesn't that sentence provide an exception for the classic third-party tortfeasor?
Yes, it does.
Is it broader than that? I mean, the typical case is your employee is driving a truck and he's hit by a third-party tortfeasor and injured in the course of his employment, and he can sue the third-party tortfeasor without limitations on damages. Is this exception broader than that?
Is the exception broader than that? I don't think so, Your Honor, because in that classic situation, the injured person can't foresee a potential injury of somebody else on the road and can't protect themselves against with workers' compensation to protect against I guess, unknown acts. But a sole proprietor whose business it is to go into the homes or go into the businesses of other people can foresee certain injuries and can protect themselves specifically against those injuries. So the classic situation, if Mr. Cavallari had been performing work for the Andersons and had been injured on his drive to the Andersons, because his work involved going back and forth and getting supplies, he can sue that driver, because they are not, he is not providing services directly for the driver that injured him.
That's my memory. What is the alleged negligence of the Andersons?
This involved a wooden railing that had been constructed on the stairs leading from the front door down to the front yard. And the allegations are that Mr. Cavallari either leaned on or put some weight or barely touched that railing. It collapsed and he fell over the railing. He was exiting the home. So it was while he was doing the tile work in the
home. That's a typical premises liability case.
Yes, yes. I'd like to touch on briefly, Your Honor, in the Cavallari's brief, they argued that the purpose, one of the purposes of the workers' compensation scheme is this trade-off argument, that an employer pays premiums to provide for workers' compensation benefits and in the exchange gets immunity from tort suit. And the Cavallari's argument
and the employee gets benefits without the traditional common law defenses.
Exactly. It's no fault type benefits. Yeah. And I would just state that the Pulsifer Court actually considered that trade-off argument and discussed it at page 662 and noted that the general contractor in that case also did not pay premiums and got the benefit of the limitations. And I think the reasoning here is that the focus of this statute is to allow, or the focus is on the individual who fits into one of the three categories at the beginning of the statute, an independent contractor, a general contractor or sole proprietor who's not covered under workers' compensation, or an officer of a corporation who rejects coverage. That's the focus. The focus isn't on the defendant, and the intent isn't to protect the defendant. The intent is to, again, make the person who was who could have obtained insurance suffer the risk of any injuries over $15,000.
Incentivize the sole proprietor to buy himself workers' comp.
Exactly, which is one of the stated purposes in the various cases cited in the brief is of this statute is to promote participation in the workers' compensation system. One final point with respect to Mrs. Cavallari's claim for loss of consortium, it's in the briefs. I'd just like to reiterate here that was never raised at the trial court and should not be therefore considered here at the appellate level. The argument was never raised. So unless the court has more questions, I will sit down. Thank you.
Thank you. You give appellant 2 minutes.
Thank you, Judge.
Well, we got only a minute 57 left here. We can just use it.
I would just like to reiterate to the court that if the Andersons have no obligations under the Workers' Compensation Act, which they do not, they are not entitled to the protections of the Act. And if this is viewed as some sort of penalty for failure to have insurance...
Didn't that seem sort of harsh? They're not required. Matter of fact, they're specifically excluded from having to buy the coverage. And because of that, they're open to unlimited damages, presumably.
Presumably because they are not an employer. He could not collect workers' compensation benefits from them if he got injured performing work at their home, which the legislature believed was a protection. Later on, the legislature said, well, since we've exempted you out from being an employer of someone you bring over to cut your bushes or mow your lawn and they get hurt doing it, if you really feel like you want to have coverage, because this is a pretty good deal, the limitations in this act, you can purchase that coverage and have the protection, which they opted not to do. And we cited to the Phillips book that indicated that is a way to protect yourself from these unlimited damages. It's not only Mr. Cavallari that had the option, the Andersons did too. and they chose not to participate. So they aren't entitled to the protections.
841-401, it's providing a benefit to the Andersons. But nothing in the language of the statute talks about the employer. It talks about the employee. It talks about the sole proprietor, doesn't it? It talks about the individual. Could it not be, as they suggest, that the purpose of this is to encourage the proprietor to buy workers?
What I would say is that there's penalties, of course, in the statute for failure to be insured, but if you're a sole proprietor, how can you penalize yourself? But the words that we're missing when we're talking about this is he has to have the ability to be covered under the Act in order for this section to apply. And what I am saying is that he cannot be covered under the Act because of the legal status of the defendants, the Andersons, in this case.
Okay. Thank both counsel for their arguments. It's certainly, as are many workman's compensation cases, difficult. A written opinion will issue in due course. Thank you, counsel.